regarding home and family, and I'm basing these lessons upon the book of Genesis because I've discovered that Genesis contains a wealth of practical material about family relationships, home and family. We get insights into wives and husbands, into fathers and their children, and so forth. And so this morning we're going to continue in that study and take a look, as you saw from the previous slide and had a chance to read from Genesis chapter 13. I want to talk about a man by the name of Lot and the impact that Lot had upon his family. The story of Lot is contained in chapters 13 and 19 of Genesis. And Lot was, if you remember, and if you're not, we'll bring you up to where we are. Lot was a nephew of a man by the name of Abram. That's when we first meet this man, who later had his name changed to Abraham. But at the time of our study, he was known as Abram. And Lot and Abram had an uncle-nephew relationship. There are some things that we see with Lot as a husband, as a father, that hopefully we can look at and learn some lessons from. I want to begin in the New Testament, though, and take a look at a passage which is interesting because of the way that Lot is described by Peter. Peter says he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men. For by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. Three times in two verses, the Holy Spirit, who inspired Peter, said, call him righteous. Call this man a righteous man. So we know, as we will see from our study this morning, we know that Lot was a husband. He was a father to two girls, and he was a father-in-law to two young men. Now, since Peter called him a righteous man and just repeated it, righteous man, righteous soul, righteous Lot, It should be that we expect, when we look at the story of Lot as a father, as a husband, and as a father-in-law, see great things. See wonderful things, wonderful examples about being a father and being a husband, and the kind of impact that a righteous man would have upon his wife, upon his daughters, and upon his sons-in-law. Is that what we find when we study chapters 13 and 19 of Genesis? Let's do a little departure for a moment and go back to two other men. And we don't talk about these men, hardly at all. But I want to take a look at two men who had a marvelous impact upon their family. One that I can only wish that I could have upon mine, and I'm sure that you feel the same way about yours. Jonadab and Rechab. Those names familiar to you? Well, unfortunately, unless you're into Bible trivia, they don't. But let's read something that Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah, let's read what Jeremiah said about these two men, Jonadab and Rechab, and the influence that they had, or Rechab, the impact they had upon their family. Jeremiah chapter 35 and verse 5. Then I set before the men of the house of the Rechabites pitchers full of wine and cups. And I said to them, drink wine. But they said, we will not drink wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, you shall not drink wine, you are your sons, forever. You shall not build a house, and you shall not sow seed, and you shall not plant a vineyard or own one. But in tents you shall dwell all your days, that you may live many days in the land where you sojourn. We have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he commanded us, not to drink wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, or our daughters, nor to build ourselves houses to dwell in. And we do not have a vineyard or a field or seed. We have only dwelt in tents and have obeyed and done according to all that Jonadab, our father, commanded us. Now, there's a point to this story. We won't get into that. That's another time. The Rechabites were offered wine to drink. Now, the reason for these prohibitions is another thing. That's not what I'm getting at. It's their response. The Rechabites said, no, we're not going to drink wine, but because Jonadab and Rechab, our forefathers, they said don't do it. They said don't build houses. They said don't plant vineyards. They said to live in tents. That's what they told us to do, and so that's what we're going to do. Do you know how long this has been going on? Do you know when this first got started? How long have the Rechabites been refusing to drink wine? Them and their spouses and their children. How long had they been dwelling in tents? How long had they not been planting? How long had that been going on? 250 years. 250 years. You talk about family values. You talk about men who had an impact. 250 years from today, will your offspring be living by the same family values and family principles that you live by today? The Rechabites did. Now, that's another story. And the reason I bring these up is I want to do a contrast now, because now I want to go back to Genesis 13. You would expect, since Lot was called righteous three times in two verses by Peter, you would expect that a righteous husband, a righteous father, a righteous father-in-law would have the same kind of impact upon his house that Jonadab and Rechab had. Is that what we find? Let's go back to the first 10 verses of Genesis 13 and look at the offer that Abram made to his nephew Lot. Now, the story, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but the story in these first 10 verses is that Abram had been blessed by God, as God had promised him back in the 12th chapter. Abram had been blessed by God. He had flocks, he had livestock, he had been blessed tremendously. Lot had been similarly blessed. He had, maybe not the equivalent of what Abram had, but he had a lot of livestock, a lot of cattle, a lot of sheep. And they were living together. They were living in the same region. All of their cattle, all of their livestock were feeding off the same acreage. And for whatever reason, we're not told, there arose some strife, some bitterness between the herdsmen of Abram and the herdsmen of Lot. They were arguing, they were fighting. And so Abram is magnanimous. He goes to Lot and he said, look, I realize that there is strife between our herdsmen. And it shouldn't be that way because we're family. And I don't want there to be strife. So I tell you what, Lot, I want you to just take a look at the land. And we're going to need to separate. It's just expedient that we do so. And so what I'm going to do, even though I'm the older, and I'm paraphrasing a lot here, but Abraham, you know, I'm the older one, but I tell you what, you get first choice. Wherever you want to go in this land, you pick it. And if you go one way, I will go the opposite way. That way we'll split. Our herdsmen won't be fighting, and we won't have any problems between ourselves. And so this is the offer that Lot is made. He can go anywhere he wants to go, live anywhere he wants to live. The latter part of chapter 13 tells us about Lot's decision. Lot selects the Valley of the Jordan. That area that he selected is located in the very southern part where the Jordan River empties into what is now called the Dead Sea. And if I understand things correctly, there was no Dead Sea at this time. The Valley of the Jordan was eye-pleasing. It was great for pasturing the cattle, taking care of the sheep, whatever they had. It was great for that. It was a beautiful place. But from a practical standpoint, it was what Lot would need since he had a lot of cattle. So Lot decides, that's what I want. That's where I want to go. And so Lot moves away from the godly influence of Abram. He decides. And there's some speculation I can engage in here. I've wondered why, instead of moving, Lot and Abram said, let's try to work these differences out. get rid of the guys that are fussing and fighting among her. Kick them out. And let's stay together. I need you and you need me. I don't know. Maybe there was a practical consideration that the cattle were just taking up. There wasn't enough land to take care of all the cattle. That could be it. But anyway, he moves away from Abram. And he ignores what was even then the well-known reputation of Sodom. Chapter 13, verse 13, and then in 2 Peter 2, 7 and 8. Even at the time that Lot made this decision, it was well known this is a bad place. It is a horrible place. That the men of Sodom are exceedingly wicked. They're as vile as they can be. But Lot says, that sure looks good. So that's where I'll go. That brings us to chapter 19. There are always consequences to the decisions that we make. Lot decides to move to the Jordan Valley. He decides to move to the Sodom and Gomorrah area. Totally void, totally lacking spiritual influences. A place where it would be very, very difficult to live the life that's pleasing to God. And Lot said, "That's where I want to go." Now look at the impact of Lot's decision upon his family. Verse 8 of chapter 19 contains one of the most inexplicable things to me in all of Scripture. When the messengers come to Lot's house and they knock on Lot's door literally and they say, "We want those men to come out and we want to have physical relationships with them." Lot says, "No, no, no. But I'll send out my daughters to you." Why was he called a righteous man? I don't know. I don't know why David was called a man after God's own heart sometimes, when he did some of the things he did. Do you think that on the day that Lot said, "I want to go to the Jordan Valley. I want to move to Sodom." If somebody had told him, "Lot, if you go there, you will wind up offering your daughters to have physical relationships with perverted men." Do you think that Lot would have believed that? I don't know how long Lot lived down there before this happened. That was one of the consequences of Lot moving to Sodom. He lost his sons-in-law and he lost his wife. His sons-in-law stayed in Sodom and they were killed, evidently, in the destruction of the city. And then Lot's wife, as they were leaving the city, she violated what was told them by God not to look back, and she looked back and she was punished. She turned into a pillar of salt. Jesus even believed that. Luke 17, verse 32, I believe. "Remember Lot's wife." That really happened. And then it gets worse, if it can get worse. Once Lot and his two daughters get out of the city, and the city's destroyed, the two daughters, and whether they had lived in Sodom for so long that they became perverted in their thinking, I don't know, we're not told, but they thought, "We don't have husbands now, and so we're not going to have any children. So let's go get Dad drunk and let him become the father of our children." Really? Really? Now again, on the day that Lot chose Jordan Valley and Sodom to live in, do you think that he ever entered his mind that he would offer his daughters up to a group of perverted men, that he would lose his wife and his sons-in-law, and that he would allow himself to get drunk and have children by his own daughters? That's the impact that Lot had upon his family. All because Lot made a very, very bad decision. Let's consider some practical lessons from this story about the impact of Lot upon his family. For one thing, righteous husbands and fathers make mistakes. Men, don't ever overestimate yourself. You may look at yourself and humbly realize that you are a righteous man. You are a godly man. You are a righteous husband. You're a godly father. But don't fall into the same mistaken way of thinking that Peter fell into when he was told by the Lord that he would deny him. Peter, no, never, ever will I do that. And we know the rest of that story. I don't know. We're not told if Lot was warned about moving to the Jordan Valley in Sodom. We're not told that. If he was, maybe Lot thought, yeah, I know that things are bad in Sodom. I know the reputation like everybody. I know it's bad down there. And I know that I'm moving my daughters and my wife into a place that is exceedingly wicked before the Lord. I know that. But I'm strong. I can handle it. I can do it. Really. This righteous man really messed up. Beware of decisions that are based solely upon material considerations. As we said, Lot looked at the Jordan Valley. It was eye-appealing. It was appealing occupational-wise to the feeding of his cattle. Everything looked great externally. And that evidently was the basis upon which Lot made this decision. Every father, husband here this morning, you're entrusted with the leadership of your home. You're to be the leader in regard to the wife. You're to be the leader in regard to the children. It's your responsibility. And the decisions that you make, it may be something like Lot moving to another area of the state or another area of the country. The decisions, number three, the decisions that you make will have some long-term and perhaps unforeseen consequences. Why do you want to take a job in a place where there's no Christians? Why do you want to take your family into that? I'm righteous. I'm a good man. Okay. But why do you want to push it? Why do you want to test it? Why do you want to take your family into an area of the state or an area of the country that is godless, and you know it's godless? When I say it's liberal, I'm not talking about politically liberal now. I'm talking about morally liberal, where people generally do not accept biblical precepts and principles. Why do you want to do that? And take your children into an educational system that is devoid of things that contribute to family value. Why didn't you do that? Or why would you want to take a job? Maybe it's in the same town. But to take a job that will expose you to things that really have the potentiality of being very wicked and very evil and vile. Why take a job like that? Why deliberately opt to move to a place where your righteousness is going to be put to the test and your faith is going to be... Why do that? It's what Lot did. And look at what happened. You think in Lot's old age, if somebody had gone to him and said, Lot, was it worth it? When he found out that he was going to be the father of his daughter's children, do you think he would have said, yeah, I'm glad I moved to Sodom? And then there's that fourth thing. Lot moving away from Abram. There may have been some practical reasons why that was a thing that might be done, but I wonder if something couldn't have been worked out to where they could have stayed together and Abram and Lot could have gotten along and Abram could have been impacted by righteous Lot and righteous Lot could have been impacted by faithful Abram. And we wouldn't be reading about Sodom and Gomorrah and incest and all of that if they had just stayed together. There's something to be said, fathers, husbands, if you're living in an area where there are, number one, you've got family that's godly. They're righteous. Your in-laws are godly and righteous people. Your children's grandparents are tremendously strong, faithful, righteous people. Why would you want to move them away from that into a place that is godless and completely lacking in all of that? Why? When I was about 12 years old, my dad had a chance to move to another place. But I was 12. And I was thinking like a Lot. It had the potential for tremendous material benefit. And I did everything I could respectfully to tell Dad, take the job, take the offer, go, go, go. Dad refused to do it. It wasn't until about 10 years later. But Dad told me the rest of the story. And one of the best things my dad ever did was turn down that job. It wouldn't have been good. And I'm so thankful that he did it. There are some things that are simply not worth the price. Those of you who are fathers and husbands today, you've got a choice. You can make poor decisions and wind up like Lot. Or you can make very wise decisions and become the Rechabites of the 21st century and have a long-lasting impact for good upon your wife, your children, your in-laws, your grandchildren for many, many generations to come. The choice is yours. Next week, I'm not going to tell you who these people are, but I'll just tell you, we're going to talk next week about the faith of a father and son. You probably know right now who I'm talking about, but if you really want to know, come back next week. There's a father and son in the Old Testament in Genesis whose faith is just tremendous. And we're going to take a look at some lessons we can learn from the faith of this father and the faith of this son next week. Thank you.